And for the record, this is the registration accreditation agreement, and we are recording.
So, if the councilors can have their seat, I'm going to take Matt. Yeah, I'm going to just kind of start this because I know there's such a short amount of time, and Stefan's not in the room. But Matt, you are here, correct?
That is correct. I am here.
Okay, so why don't we start with presentation. Matt Serland, the chair of the Registrar Stakeholder Group, is going to...
We're kind of sharing the presentation, so staff and Matt.
So Margie, Milam, and Matt will be sharing this presentation, as you heard. So why don't we get it kicked off so we can, you know, have a good discussion afterwards.
Okay. Hi, everyone. We have several members of the negotiating team here, a few from staff and a few on the registrar side. Unfortunately, Kurt and John aren't able to be here, but hopefully we'll be able to answer whatever questions as we get through the discussion. And we prepared these slides. We didn't have time to share them with the registrars beforehand, so we apologize. But what we'll do is we'll go slide by slide and have an interactive discussion.
Hi, everyone. I'm Sam Eisner. I'm senior counsel with ICANN and part of the negotiating team. With the REA negotiations, since Prague, we have had 6 negotiation sessions between ICANN and the registrars. That also includes 2 full days of face-to-face meetings in D.C. One of those days, we invited representatives from the GAC and law enforcement to attend, and it was actually a very productive session, and we identified a lot of progress on the law enforcement recommendations in that session. as a result, and as you may have seen in the summary that was posted in advance of the Toronto meeting, all 12 of the law enforcement recommendations have been addressed in whole or in part. We're really calling this 11 and a half out of 12. And we'll get a little bit into the half where we have some issues remaining. But as you all know, there are other items on the table in addition to the law enforcement recommendations. There are some asks from registrars. There are some asks from ICANN, as well as incorporation of the existing GNSO drafting team recommendations that have been in place for a while. And those really call up some complex and challenging issues. And so we are continuing the discussion on the GNSO, ALAC, the registrar, and ICANN recommendations. That's really where the focus of a lot of our work between ICANN and the registrar team will be in the next couple months. Matt?
Maybe we should have switched.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks, Sam. Just one quick point. The face-to-face session, the GAC and the law enforcement folks were present, not participating in negotiations, but present in terms of getting feedback about the who is verification and the data retention piece. So that was kind of separate from the actual negotiations between staff and the registrar group.
Matt, just say who you are for this transcript, please.
Matt Serland.
So the negotiations since Prague have really been focused on 2 key issues, and we highlighted these issues in Prague, and they were really the subject of the REA session update that we held in Prague. 2 main issues were who is verification and data retention, and the progress that we've made on those to date. The who is verification at this point is really where the half issue comes in. We have reached a point where the registrars have agreement on providing verification of the data in a post-resolution phase. So that is after the domain name resolves, then the registrars will take steps to complete the verification items that are called for. The area of difference that we have and the law enforcement recommendation or clarifications that we've received from law enforcement since then, the law enforcement is willing to accept a post-resolution verification scenario, but are really calling for verification of two items of data in that post-resolution phase, so that's email and phone number. And the what is on the table from the registrars today is email and or phone number at the registrar's election. And so that and or is really where the half goes. And so that's a place where I think we could agree that between us, there's not a lot of negotiation more that we can do on this point. It's just, it is where it is. And we're going to have to come to agreement on what we're going to put out about it. We have had some ideas raised about other ways to make this tenable for law enforcement, and that would include some sort of pilot program for a pre-resolution world. And so we may be exploring some sort of tabletop exercise or how to get that tabletop in place. And so that's one of the ways that we might move forward with that. Matt, did you want to speak to who is verification?
Yeah, this is Matt Sorland again. Sorry. Thanks, Sam. It's a good summary. I think Sam is correct in that, you know, the registrar stakeholder group has pretty broad-based support for post-resolution phone or email validation. And really what we're hoping to accomplish during the week here in Toronto is to get additional feedback from the community. You know, since Prague, we've been having these conversations, and then just in the past couple of weeks, there have been some developments. We talked earlier about the Article 29 letter, so really hoping to be able to get additional feedback from the community and then come back with staff and continue to work on these.
In terms of data retention, if you recall where we were in Prague, we had a law enforcement recommendation on the table for a blanket two-year retention period for all the types of data that they were requesting registrars to retain. And where we've moved since then is an agreement on a bifurcated retention schedule. So there, some items would be subject to a two-year retention schedule, but some of the more sensitive data would be subject to retention for only 6 months from the time of creation, and it would not be the longer period of 2 years after the life of the registration. And that was developed so that we could try to encompass more of the data retention and privacy laws around the world and really have kind of an even playing field for the registrars who are on this. Where we've moved from there is that we recognize that there is still the possibility, as evidenced with the Article 29 letter that's come up, that there may be registrars whose local laws still prohibit them from retaining data in accordance with even this six-month schedule. And so where we've really moved and where we sought some assistance from the GAC, and we're trying to work through the GAC on this topic, is identifying an exception process for when the retention schedule would place the registrar in violation of local laws. As you may recall, there is a process in place called the WHOIS conflicts or of law policy. I think it has a little bit of a different name, but it is a process whereby if there is a WHOIS proceeding that's initiated against the registrar or a registry, that registrar or registry could then go through a process where they would bring in data protection authorities and bring that to ICANN's attention, and then they could apply for a waiver, and there's a process for governmental involvement in that. And so where we've come to is we have a proposal to actually modify that policy to make it of broader application and applicable for this data retention issue as well, and also identify the trigger so that a registrar or registry would not actually have to be found in violation of law before they could avail themselves of the procedure. So we don't want to force our contracted parties to be in violation of law before they can seek relief from that. And so that's where we're trying to get some input from the GAC on what might be acceptable to them, because these are laws that the GAC representatives are responsible for enforcing. And so that's really the process that we're going down to come to resolution on this point.
Thanks. Can I stop you there? I've got a couple of questions. Jeff and Wendy.
So just so I understand it, and I appreciate that last point that you said, that a registrar or registry, for that matter, shouldn't be in violation of national law before they apply to have this exemption or waiver. But you still said there still has to be an active proceeding on that? Or yes, just to clarify.
Yeah, that's what we're exploring, because in light of all, you know, these changes, we want to change the trigger point so you don't have to have an active proceeding against a registry or registrar. That somehow there'd be a trigger before that if there's a concern. But that's where we're trying to seek GAC guidance to figure out how you would go about and when would be the appropriate time and how do you get that information analyzed. And then the other kind of modification is right now that policy only applies to who is. It would also need to be expanded for data retention, because some of the concerns might be data retention issues as opposed to publication and who is.
Yeah, so just to add to that, like the second point is, I mean, I think we now know there's a letter out there from the Working Party, and we were talking about it. So I think that should automatically start, even though the contract's not final yet. I mean, you should start that process now for that, for the verification. And so there's been some members here that have said, yeah, maybe you should just remove the whole verification from the registrar accreditation agreement at this point, go through your process to determine whether, in fact, it would put a registrar in violation, as opposed to now, it almost seems like we're going forward, we're putting it in the contract, and then you guys can work it out later, but the default is it's in the contract. I think now you almost have that kind of expression of concern from the Working Party, and so I don't know what feedback you're seeking from us, but it seems to be a little bit backwards.
Do you want to respond, or can I move on?
I think that we'll see this as a topic of discussion throughout this meeting. I know that there's been a lot of attention on the Article 29 letter, and you know we have provided a response to the Article 29 letter regarding how we're trying to move forward with the creation of this process. But I think this is also somewhere where we have to bring the GAC in and make sure there's some verification of positions, not to confuse verification of who is information, but there's some verification of positions that also has to occur before we would just say this is something that's not appropriate for the negotiations. As we stand today, we're moving forward with the negotiations on this topic, though we're aware of all the issues, and it's something that we really may have to take into consideration if we learn something in the future that should change our position.
Thanks. Wendy's next.
Thanks. Since we're talking about 11 or 11 and a half out of 12, I would ask, you know, isn't this a point at which we could declare consensus and move on and drop the contentious remaining half, because there's considerable community concern with it, not just concern among the negotiating parties, that if the community can be more helpful as a voice in response. I know that the non-commercials have been trying for a long time to engage with the process, find some way to demonstrate their support for positions that are appearing through the registrars, to say, we're really close, and the way to get closer is to drop some of the outrageous demands from law enforcement, not to force the registrars over. So that would be my high-level comment. Some of the more specifics, I think, as both Sam and Jeff were mentioning, we really need to close the loophole or bug of the who is conflicts with national law policy that makes registrars put themselves in jeopardy under their national laws in order to get a ruling that they don't have to comply. And if it's something that their law enforcement agencies can't help them to address because some of these agencies are constitutionally forbidden from issuing advisory opinions, then it's for ICANN to be more flexible in its process of what it accepts as a demonstration that there is a legal problem here. Further happy to talk through that further, but I think we've seen real problems with invoking that procedure already. So we need to expand it not just beyond to the data retention as well as who is.
Thanks, Wendy. Any response?
In terms of the half issue that you mentioned, Wendy, I think that there is a point where I think the registrars would agree with us that we're having a path of diminishing returns and continuing conversations on certain topics. You know, we focused a lot on the who is verification for a very long time, and you know, we've made some very significant progress, I think, and you know, we're going to have to be realistic about the amount of progress we can continue to make on that before we get a version posted.
Marika, you have a question online.
This is Marika. I have a question in Adobe Connect from Ruben School. He asks, on the registrar proposal of verifying email and or phone, would the verification status be shown at FinWhois, as in a phone was verified but email was not, or both email and phone number verified?
The short answer is we haven't had a discussion about change to WHOIS output to reflect any sort of verified status of any domain names.
Thanks, Matt. Have next.
Yeah, I just want to refer to the comment you made earlier regarding your reply to the Article 29 letter. And it looks to me that the way you're trying to find around it creates a whole set of new problems. And one of them is very clear, is that this whole issue of WHOIS verification coming from law enforcement is in order to stop criminal activity online, which I think we're all in favor. But the problem is the solution. Well, if there's a workaround and European registrars can opt out, so, first of all, you would see more and more cybercrime moving to registrars, just being done through registrars in Europe, because this WHOIS verification will not happen there. And by the way, I personally, in this in our discussion, said that I really don't understand how this will resolve the issue if we don't have WHOIS verification on CCTLDs. And I'm kind of always been surprised from the fact that GAC is pushing very strongly on GTLDs to do this, but don't do it in CCTLDs in their own countries. So there's a whole set of problems. And there's another issue, is that there's going to be a change in the competitive landscape between registrars, because there's going to be a difference between being a European registrar to a non-European. I know maybe we'll all decide to become Europeans at that point, but this is clearly a problematic issue.
Thank you. John.
I have the same questions that Yoav has, although in my mind I form them in a less pejorative way. By creating these kinds of carve-outs, how will the registrars deal with what seems to be the emergence of competitive advantages for some over others? Has that been a part of the conversation?
Creating some sort of fair playing field or even playing field for registrars has been one of the key focuses, I think, of the negotiations. That's one of the main reasons that we've been entertaining suggestions such as the bifurcated retention schedule, that we needed to come to a place where we had not only consistent obligations, but consistent enforceable obligations across registrars. We learned that if we went to a two-year across the board, we'd have so many people coming to us for carve-outs that we would have no way to actually enforce that, as well as it could make it fairly meaningless in terms of having a big two-year retention schedule. So the same concerns, we take those into account as we're considering the Article 29 issue. Again, it's a fairly new issue to have been raised, and these are things that we're really trying to consider and work through and get input not only of this community but also bring in the GAC. We think that there may be some important information that we can learn about it and really understand the scope so that we don't create a provision that is hard for us to enforce.
Thank you. Milton.
Well, it's very surprising to hear that the Article 29 issue was a new issue, because when I was on the council 6 years ago, we were talking about the same thing, and the who is conflicts of law policy was one of the things that we produced at that time. And that's my – I have a minor question, kind of a procedural question, and then a higher-level comment. The minor question is, when you talk the staff member was talking about, we're talking about modifying the policy, and I'm wondering, does that mean that the GAC is making the policy and not the GNSO, and are there any procedural issues about that? You know, we've just been talking about the role of the GNSO and the council, and I think I made the point that one of the problems with the role of the GNSO is that whenever it's in somebody's interest to circumvent or short-circuit that process, they seem to seize it. And is this another case of that, or am I not understanding what is being discussed between the GAC and the staff? And my more high-level point is, you know, we hear all this talk lately about...
Milton, can I suggest you let them answer the first question?
Okay, sure,
yeah. Yeah, and if I can comment on that, this is Margie. The reason why we essentially went to the GAC was, if you remember in Prague, there was this discussion already of it wasn't, the letter wasn't on the table at the moment, but about privacy concerns, and we heard from the GAC that, you know, when they made they endorsed the recommendations, that they consulted, you know, that they essentially spoke for the privacy side and the law enforcement side, and they balanced those interests. And so they encouraged us to go to them to help understand how the privacy obligations, you know, relate to, say, the law enforcement requests. But setting that aside, if we get to a point where we would, you know, modify with the GAC input, we didn't mean to suggest that we wouldn't be consulting the GNSO. We would obviously go through some process where there would be, consultation, public comment, all that, because the GNSO is a very important part of that. It's just that this just sort of came out of the request from Prague, where the GAC essentially indicated that they're the experts in their laws, and they're the ones that, you know, that's kind of their purview, if you will, on how you balance these public policy issues.
Thanks, Margie. Back to you, Milton.
Yeah, I think it's totally appropriate for you to be consulting the GAC and for them to be giving you advice about these issues. But that actually leads into my next point, which is when the governments in the GAC say that they represent both the privacy and the non-privacy interests, I don't think that's actually true. And I think that's one of the structural problems with the GAC, that you don't actually have the privacy officers in there alongside the law enforcement officers, and each government kind of has an interest, depending on their local political complexion, they will push one to the expense of the other. I certainly know this is the case in the U.S. in terms of how we are represented in the GAC. And that's the higher level point, is that we hear all this talk now about the dangers of a governmental takeover of the internet, and how our bottom-up multi-stakeholder institutions are here to protect us or save us from the, you know, governments. But what we see happening here in this case, in a kind of a minor way, but the potential is much worse, is governments can circumvent their national laws via ICANN. And don't tell me that governments don't have an interest in circumventing their national laws at some point or another, because I'm talking as someone who comes from the land of the warrantless wiretap. So we know that there are agencies within the government who find it convenient to ignore procedural checks and balances. And if they can do this through the GAC, they will. This is just a fact of politics and of life. So I'd be very careful with the way we handle this. And again, if nothing else, just stick to what is supposed to be the policymaking procedure. And if we're going to change a policy, then let's make sure it goes through the GNSO.
Thanks, Milton.
Just to clarify, it's actually not a policy. It is a procedure that was based on recommendations. We did use the wrong word in the slide, so just to make sure of that one.
So if there are no further questions on this, have you finished the presentation?
No, there's on this topic, yeah, I think we can move on.
So this is kind of an overview of what we've done so far. We've made a lot of progress in key areas. First, we've identified language for the creation of an abuse point of contact that the registrars will maintain. We still have some discussion to go on the authentication of law enforcement agencies who may be seeking to use some of the heightened procedures within that abuse point of contact, but we're very close on that. We have started work to create a proxy accreditation program. We have a session scheduled here in Toronto to get some community input on the beginning of that work. We're working with the staff is working along with some representatives identified by the registrar stakeholder group to try to put together some sort of straw man with some base proposals, but then we would start taking it out for community work. So this won't be an internally created process. We're just trying to get some baseline suggestions out first, but the session here in Toronto will serve as the first time for the community to give us some input of how we should start considering the straw man proposal work. There is additional registrar information that registrars have agreed to provide to ICANN. There, many of the items that the registrars have already on their accreditation application, they've agreed to maintain updates for ICANN on those, and some of that information will actually be posted publicly either on the registrar's website or on the internet site. We have some enhanced compliance remedies now in the agreement, so whereas we had a very kind of lightweight suspension, or not a lightweight, but a very hard-to-trigger suspension right in the agreement prior, we now have the we're moving towards the ability to have suspension as a component of our compliance remedies so that we don't always have to go to the extent of termination and really have an opportunity to work with registrars to bring them into compliance with our agreements. And some of the suspension rights could be consistent breaches. But we also have new grounds for termination that we've started negotiating into the agreement, including consistent material breaches that didn't exist before. One of the main points of negotiation that we still have a lot to talk about on are the process for how we're going to continue future negotiations or future amendments to the RAA. We have started talking about that. I think we still have a long way to go on that one. We have started negotiating. We have come very close on language addressing cyber squatting by registrars. We have streamlined arbitration language so that we can try to work against some of the delays that we've seen in the arbitration process as it currently exists in the agreement, so we can get to a more speedy resolution for both ICANN and the registrar. And we've also made some progress on additional technical specs to include, such as a registrar agreement to support DNSSEC if it's requested by the registrant, and they're working with registries that support DNSSEC. Matt?
Yeah, thanks, Sam. The only one that I kind of want to touch on and just kind of reiterate what Sam said is the creation of a proxy privacy accreditation program. You know, as Sam pointed out, there's a handful of registrars that are starting to work with staff on the sort of creation of a straw man of what that would look like. But ultimately, we think, you know, that's a really good example of another complex policy issue that it's our hope and desire that that comes through the GNSO policy development process and ultimately gets created in that arena as opposed to the contractual arena. Where we essentially have agreed to, you know, be bound by whatever program is created through that. So, other than that, I think Sam summed up everything else on here.
Thanks, Matt. I have Jeff and Tim.
Yeah, I think Matt kind of covered what I was going to say in the sense, and that is also in line with the registries in our statement on the Who Is Review Team. Report. It talked about the creation of a proxy accreditation. I think that's what you're responding to. It's the registry's view that that absolutely has to go through the PDP. Of anything being discussed, that's completely within the picket fence. That is exactly the type of thing that we all envisioned going through a PDP. Of course, any registrar that wants to voluntarily adopt can always do that. But what worries me is when you talk about a proxy accreditation program, accreditation usually has implicit in that standards. And standards would have implicit things like when you have to let, when a registrar would have to reveal the name of a registrant. You know, so you have all those details, and then in order to maintain that accreditation, you, a registrar, would have to do X, Y, and Z in this time frame. All of that is really naturally, there's nothing that fits better in the PDP process than that. That's exactly, you know, what was envisioned, that type of thing. So I think it's okay. It seems like you're responding to law enforcement requests and others, but that is the poster child of what must go through a PDP unless voluntarily adopted by registrars. So I do have a concern about that, and in line with the registry's statement, that is something that absolutely should go through a PDP.
Thanks, Jeff. Tim.
Yeah, this is Tim Cole from ICANN. I just wanted to mention that on the schedule on Wednesday from 1:30 to 2:45, there is a workshop on this topic, and it's going to be seeking input from the community about the issue that Jeff raised and other issues about how such a program might be designed and how should it be developed. So encourage people to attend if you can on Wednesday at 1 o'clock. At 1:30.
Thanks, Tim. Do you want to continue?
So here's where a lot of our work now has to focus. We have continued discussions going on regarding some other Who Is obligations. One of the things that was requested was an SLA on Who Is availability. And so we have an SLA on the table, and we have some discussion to occur about that. The IDN protocols, to the extent that they can be incorporated into the register, to the registrar accreditation agreement. Also, an agreement on how registrars would transition to RESTful Who Is in the event that protocol is implemented and adopted. One of the big areas that I know we talked about in Prague, and I know, Jeff, this is a big one for you, the issue of revocation of the RAA model in a changed marketplace. ICANN has requested in the negotiations, it's one of our negotiation points, that there should be some mechanism included in the contract that allows us as a whole, as a community, to address a changed marketplace. We're still actually a very young market, but now we're moving to the point where we have new GTLDs coming in. We're moving into a place of vertical integration of registries and registrars, and we don't know what the registry, registrar, or domain name registration market is going to look like in 5 years, and we think it's the responsible thing to do to have a conversation about what we can do together to make ICANN and to make our contracts responsive to a change marketplace. And so that's why we've put this revocation language in there. There, as it exists now, in the ICANN draft, not in anything that's been agreed to by the registrars. We have a sunset period written in. We have an acknowledgement that there might be a replacement, and having a replacement scenario, any of the registrars who are on the version of the RAA could transition to that new scenario as long as they met whatever requirements were within that. We're not seeking to be punitive within this. We're seeking to be responsive. So that's really where ICANN stands on this. And I don't know, Matt, if this is a good time for me to stop before I get on the rest of the slide.
Yeah, thanks, Sam. I guess this is Matt. I guess I would just say, you know, out of all of the remaining items we still have, this probably is one that there is the most deepest division between the stakeholder group and staff. I mean, it just is not something that our stakeholder group and the members of it will live with, and so it is kind of an issue that remains open and is definitely on the path, the critical path to being able to wrap this up, because there is such a deep division between what staff has put in and our version of what we think should be there, which is it shouldn't be there at all.
So. I have Jeff and Chuck.
Thanks, and as Ed Smith, I knew I would kind of pipe up. Obviously, I agree with Matt. My question for ICANN staff is, it seems like everything else in here on this list came from some recommendation or some discussion from the community, except for this item. It seems like this item was just solely generated within ICANN staff. And while I sympathize with the fact that we don't know how the market is going to look like in 5 years, you can't expect live businesses, some of them being public companies, to put in a provision that essentially gives ICANN the unilateral right to revoke. Even with all your protections, investors in companies will not see it the way you see it, but will see it as a large inherent risk. And those public companies, as soon as you put that language in the agreement, you can make their stock tumble. All right, this has got ramifications well beyond. So my strong recommendation is drop it. It didn't come from the community. As much as I think, you know, you have sort of the right intention of, you know, we don't know where this is going to go, this agreement will renew every 5 years or whatever. And at that point in time, that's when you introduce changes and you could go through that process. It's not all of a sudden one day the market's going to completely shift and, oh, no. This is going to be gradual and over time if what you say is going to happen will happen. And I would not spend the time now worrying about the doomsday scenario. There's no possible acceptable outcome of that provision in with the registrars and I'll say the registries, because we fought it tooth and nail when it was attempted to be put in the registry agreements. Really, this one came out of nowhere. It didn't come from the community. And I think of all the other things in there, you know, at least you could tie every one of the other things to the community. I will say the transition to RESTful WHOIS worries me, as it does with, you know, in the registry agreements, because you're asking people to contractually sign on to something that hasn't been developed yet, and we don't fully understand the business requirements of it and the ramifications. So those are the two I kind of have an issue with.
Thanks, Jeff. Sam, do you want to respond or no? Chuck's next. I have you, Thomas.
Thanks, Stefan. I understand the need for having flexibility for dealing with changes in the marketplace, because it will change. But why such an extreme position as a unilateral revocation clause? Any attorney in his right mind would never sign up to one of those. And yet this is another example of ICANN, the corporation, being unwilling to assume even the slightest risk, and all the risk has flowed down to the participants in the community. That just doesn't make sense, to have a revocation clause to deal with flexibility in the marketplace. There can be transition clauses to deal with things like that, but such an extreme clause just doesn't make sense.
So, Margie, did you want to just respond?
Yeah, a little bit more background on the revocation clause as well. In part, there's also a registrar ask to have a presumption of renewal, and then there's this concern on the staff side that if there's an automatic, essentially automatic renewal type concept, does that mean this is a perpetual thing that we can never get out of? And so in some sense, there needs to be a way of dealing with that if that is a continued ask on the registrar side. And so this was one way of dealing with that.
Thanks. Thomas.
Thank you, Stefan. I would like to add maybe a different facet to that discussion surrounding the revocation clause. If ICANN is thinking about competition and choice, it's also a choice in registrars. And if we talk about being globally inclusive, we need to talk about emerging markets. We see very few ICANN accredited registrars in many, many countries. If you count them, in most of the countries we don't even have one. And if you burden potential investors with the risk of a revocation, I think that would have a detrimental effect on stimulate the creation of new players in this field.
Thanks, Thomas. Jonathan.
Well, that's an interesting supplementary argument that Thomas places. I mean, you know, in many ways what's been said is adequate. It's just I feel it's very important to add weight to that argument. I also feel very, very strongly that a unilateral revocation, and I think I can understand that there's some concern about the presumption of renewal, but my understanding of presumption of renewal is, you know, that can be revoked on the basis of a failure to perform under the contract. So I think you have some protections in that respect. And so, you know, I find it very difficult. And particularly, I think I should endorse the issue of in relation to any form of external investment in the business and being forced to, as a part of that due diligence process, disclose the contractual basis on which this business is founded and operated, and to then have to expose that ultimately that kind of condition exists there would substantially weaken one's ability to raise capital in a debt or equity market. So it's a concern.
Yeah.
So as Margie was alluding to, another component for ICANN of this revocation discussion is not just the presumption of renewal, but also having the correct mechanisms in place to amend the agreement if needed. And so that's another area where we think that improvements are needed if we are to come to a point where we would reconsider how we had a revocation clause put in. So if we're in a perpetual cycle of renewal, we need to make sure that we have the flexibility of ease of amendment where we don't have to go through protective processes to get to amendment, et cetera. And so, you know, ease of amendment to reflect changes in marketplace would be another place where we think that it's necessary to really have some movement within the agreement. And, you know, I think that we can all agree that the amendment processes that we followed to date in 2009 and the protracted negotiations that we've had this year are not really the most efficient ways to get movement and change. So we'd like to really consider how we can get this to a better place.
Thanks. Michele, I've got Michele, Jeff, and Marika with an online question, and we are running close to time, so please keep your comments short. Michele, thank you.
Thanks, Stefan. And may I say it's great honor to be able to see you for your last GNSO Council meeting, you know, that with Stefan leaving us this week. It's at the end of an era in some respects. There's a couple of things here, and I'm sitting here, I'm not a lawyer. I listen to these things, I sign contracts a lot. And what's coming from ICANN staff on this entire thing around the renewal, presumptive renewal and all this, leaves me scratching my head, getting very, very confused. And then I fire off emails to my lawyer, and my lawyer gets even more confused. I can understand that ICANN would not like to have a situation where once a registrar becomes accredited, there's absolutely no way on this earth for that accreditation to disappear. But if you actually enforce the contract against us, then of course there's no reason why that would be the situation. This entire thing about being for you to be able to unilaterally remove the entire RAA at the drop of a hat is just the oddest concept I've ever heard of. I mean, surely other instances, if one of the two entities that is party to a contract ceases to exist, then the contract pretty much disappears. I mean, I'll let the lawyers word that more beautifully and use nice words and everything, but from my perspective as a non-lawyer, I find this entire thing just completely nonsensical. We sign contracts with registries where this is not an issue. I don't understand why ICANN is making something which they've handled badly in the past, taking it to a level of dysfunctionality that just leaves me with a massive headache and total confusion. Thank you.
Thank you, McKay, and thank you for the kind words. Do you want to respond, or should I go to Jeff? Jeff.
I think Jonathan said some of what I was going to say. I don't see that the quid pro quo for a presumption of renewal be the revocation. Presumption of renewal could be based on meeting certain standards. And I know that, you know, there could be audits done. There's plenty of mechanisms within the contract to make sure that a registrar is living up to its obligations. So you're presuming that it's renewed if the registrar is doing everything it's supposed to be doing. What you're saying is you want a revocation clause that basically says even if the registrar is doing everything right, you want the right to just completely terminate and then maybe come up with some alternate model. I just don't see at this point in time that is a path that's really worth pursuing at this point. I think, you know, you have things in the agreement. You have consensus policy process. You have an amendment process that's going to be put in here. There are plenty of other avenues to address these types of issues. But to just say that a revocation right because you don't know what's going to happen is just, it's not good enough. And again, I've yet to hear members of the community voice out any support for this. I've only heard negative things. And in fact, the only people I've heard in favor of this is ICANN staff. I could be wrong. And if there's anyone in the community that agrees, then they should speak up. But otherwise, this is just ICANN staff driven. And it's really unfair in this kind of monopolistic quasi-regulatory model where you as the quasi-regulator have this power over the registrars where even the rest of the community is telling you, we don't see this as a high priority issue. At that point, if you're not getting support from the community for it, you probably should not exert your power over the registrars to make them try to agree to something that nobody in the community supports.
Thanks, Jeff. I think you're getting some clear messages. I don't know if they're coming through in any way, but I think they're quite clear. But obviously, I can't say that. So I'll just move on to the next question, which comes from Marika.
Yeah, this is Marika. I have two questions on behalf of Steve Metallitz. The first question is, has a comparison been made, updated, between the current text and the GNSO ALAC drafting team high and medium priority issues? And his second question is, what is the timetable for releasing the draft agreement? And negotiations have been underway for 1 year, and the revision process is approaching the four-year mark.
Just to be clear, we haven't published a new RAA. The draft that was published back before Prague is essentially the last version that was published. So there's nothing new since Prague on that. What we published were a series of summary documents. And I think we'll move to the next slide on the timeline, or maybe we'll skip it. Do you want to go through this?
I hadn't realized that. How many more slides do you have? Because we've got 3 minutes left.
We can skip the next slide. The next slide was just merely explaining what documents we posted. That's not something we need to go through. You can look at it later.
We have a slide, actually, on a proposed timeline. So it's kind of responsive to Steve's question. We'll help wrap this up. So this, as a caveat, has not been vetted with the registrars. We have been actively discussing with Fadi, our new CEO, who's very interested in negotiations and also very interested to see this brought to a close in a swift and efficient manner. He has tasked us with seeing what we can do to bring the negotiations to a close and get a revised RAA posted for public comment by the end of December. And so we're going to try to work with the registrars to get that done. And hopefully they have the time in the next couple months to do that with us. The timeline that we've posted here is post a revised RAA for public comment in December 2012. revise the REA to account for comments if necessary in February 2012 and hopefully get to approval in March or April.
You mean 13, right?
Yes, the 13th. Yeah, February 2013, exactly.
Thanks. Jeff?
So, thanks, Samantha. And I know you may not be able to answer this, but when you say you post a revised RA for public comment, I'm assuming, or I shouldn't assume, but will that be the version that's mutually agreed between the registrars and ICANN, or will it be an ICANN version indicating where there's still disagreement? What I don't want to see happen, what I thought was a little bit of a blind side, was the fact that when you posted the last version, you posted the ICANN version as opposed to, you know, so there were things in there that hadn't been mutually agreed. So I guess mine's more of a question and a comment. When you post this in December 2012, I'd like to see the REA that's mutually agreed, and then if you wanted to do a separate memo attached to it, say, here's extra things ICANN still wants in there, and here's the reasons registrars don't want them, or vice versa, as opposed to, because once you post that version, you create the expectation that that's going to be the final version, and I think that may not be the right expectation. So thanks.
So just to confirm, our goal is to post a negotiated REA. When we post an REA for public comment that we put out to say this is what we're putting up for public comment, and we tried to be very clear when we posted in June that it was not a final or negotiated version, but when we're looking at December, in our minds, we are trying to post a negotiated REA, or else all the time that we've spent on this is just not worthwhile.
Thanks. So I have Alan and Matt. Matt, you'll have the closing remarks, and then we'll have to stop. Alan, please be short.
Very short. Question for Sam. Having lived through the dog's breakfast of the approval of the 2009 RAA, when you say post-final RAA for approval, approval by whom?
I think that that's still a matter for us to have some discussions with the registrars on before we decide that here. I don't know, Margie, if you have other comments on that.
Yeah, we need to discuss that further.
I hope we won't end up in a situation where the GNSO is again given something as a fait accompli to rubber stamp, which doesn't sit real well here.
Thanks, Alan. Matt, can you close this off?
Thanks, Stefan. Yeah, I'm usually pretty good about having the last word. I just want to reiterate what Sam said, and that, you know, from the registrar standpoint, you know, we have spent a lot of time. We understand that, you know, the community, you know, wants this to be wrapped up. Staff wants it to be wrapped up. We want it to be wrapped up. But, you know, I just want to echo that the points where there is substantial differences, I just want to be clear in that, you know, part of the discussion with staff going forward will be, you know, if we can't come to agreement on those major issues for us, you know, is it time to, as someone suggested earlier, take those out of the contract discussion process? And so if we can, you know, get that kind of progress between now and December, I think that's a great kind of aspirational timeline. Thanks.
Right. Thank you very much, everyone, for this very good discussion. We'll close this off now. Operator, please end this session. We will start immediately with the IRTP Part C session. I'm looking around to see if James and Avery... yes, they're James, I see, and Avery, I don't, but Avery's there. Look. So we'll give the tech guys the usual 3 minutes to switch over. And then start again.